Blog Talk Radio.
Russian female, or actually she was Lithuanian, became Empress of Russia, Catherine I. She only reigned for 2 years. A great Italian composer, Arrighito Boito, had a famous opera, Mephistopheles, that Arturo Toscanini premiered. He was born today. And this is interesting. In World War II, we had several of our military leaders who were of German heritage. In 1863, Admiral Chester Nimitz, German heritage, was born in Texas, and he was the chief of operations in World War II of the U.S. Navy. And, of course, we had General Dwight Eisenhower, also born in Texas, although in October. He was born, I think, in Abilene, Texas, German heritage. And then he had Carl Spatz, S-P-A-A-T-Z, head of the U.S. Army Air Corps, also worked with General Billy Mitchell. He was the head of the 8th Air Force and of the Air Force in World War II, or it was called the U.S. Army Air Force. After World War II, the Air Force was separated, was set up as a separate department. Now, this one's interesting. Kurt Tank was born today. It's an unusual name. He was a little known, not well publicized, but a very prolific a German aircraft engineer designer. And he designed an aircraft that was one of the best in Germany, the FW-190. And there's a picture on the of it on our master page for today of this program. And if you see these World War II films of the Luftwaffe fighting the British and the Americans, you will see this plane, and you probably won't recognize it because the more famous one was the Messerschmitt. But this was probably one of the best planes that was all around and had all around capabilities, night fighting, combat, escort, all of that. And of course, it's an unusual name, Kurt Tank. So when you see that plane, and you see a plane you don't recognize, it's not a Messerschmitt or a Junker, it's probably the FW-190 that Kurt Tank design. Also today, his birthday, if you remember The Godfather, this was a big, long, big, lanky guy who was one of the, I don't know if you can call him a hitman, sir, an associate of The Godfather, Abe Vigoda. He's 92 today. and he had this droll voice, big tall guy, born in New York, I think a Jewish heritage. Also today, and this is coming up again, all this radical socialism, and Michael Harrington, who's written a few books on the subject, was born today in 1928, I think. And then those of you who saw the movie Summer of 1942 and other French, and other movies, this French composer, Michel Legrand, he was born today. Great opera singer, she's still living, Renata Scotto, Italian. Then the first Jewish heritage vice president, although he says he practices, he doesn't drive a car on the Sabbath, Joe Lieberman, vice presidential nominee on the Kerry ticket when he ran against George Bush the first, or the second, I think, yeah. Those of you who saw the Rocky Horror Show, Barry Bostic, his birthday today. And then another movie actor, a Latino, born in California, Joseph Alamos, one of his famous films, I think he's dead, Stand and Deliver. And those of you who use Apple, today is the birthday of Steve Jobs. He also was just discovered that had stopped dividends that were being paid by his company. And right now, his successor, Tim Cook, is thinking about restoring the dividends. They made a lot of money, Apple. So this is going to be interesting. And there are a lot of strange things about Steve Jobs that are now coming out. Among the deaths today, Robert Fulton, the inventor of the steamboat. Well, now, it's not known, it's not well known that he went to Napoleon when Napoleon was thinking of invading England, and he offered him a design for the steamboat that they could use to invade England. But Napoleon just brushed them off. Also today, famous another composer who did Song of Bernadette, Franz Waxman, died today. And then when they called it K&B, Khrushchev and Bulganin, these were the people that succeeded Stalin, Nikolai Bulganin. They also made an infamous trip to England on a Russian cruiser called the, it starts with an O, I can never pronounce it. And this cruiser, apparently there was a British naval underground specialist called Commander Crabb. And he allegedly did a surveillance of the ship, and apparently he disappeared. And a month later, a headless corpse appeared. I think this is the story. So he was checking out the Russian naval design. People don't know that the Russians are very accomplished in the field of naval architecture. Peter the Great, and we'll get into that with one of the YouTube's videos that we'll be putting up pretty soon. He was the founder of the Russian Navy, and just to digress, Peter the First, Peter the Great, went, he actually was a hands-on emperor. He went to Holland to learn shipbuilding, and he also went to England and built the Russian Navy and defeated the Swedes, who were the premier military and naval power in Europe at the time, on the continent, that is. Then he beat, I think it was Charles X, who was gay. And that was the end. The Russians and the Swedes were always fighting. And when the Russians weren't fighting with the Swedes, they were fighting with the Germans. So this is interesting that the Bulganin, they came to on a state visit to Russia, to England, and this naval commander of the Royal Navy apparently did a surveillance of the ship, but he didn't survive to give the results. A famous singer who had an alcoholic problem, Johnny Ray, died at 61 today. Tennessee Williams, another famous writer, also I think he was gay. Malcolm Forbes, I think he was gay. He died today in Forbes magazine. He also liked to ride motorcycles. Dinah Shore, she died today. What a dose. among the events today, in 1208, we hear the song of the prayer of St. Francis. St. Francis of Assisi got his vocation, as we say in the Catholic Church. He got that today. Those of you who have been to Chile or have heard of Santiago, Chile, it was founded in 1541 on this date. And then you can attribute the new calendar, it's called the Gregorian calendar. In 1591, one of the popes named Gregory, there were a couple of them, one of the popes also did the Gregorian chant. This is the old chants that were used in the Catholic Church, the Latin by the masses and ceremonies. But he started the calendar reform and in 1582 approved the Gregorian calendar, which is what we use today. In 1779, George Rogers Clark captured Vincennes from the British, and then he later joined with Lewis and did the exploration all the way to the west coast up into Oregon and to Astoria. General Cornwallis, who surrendered at Yorktown, didn't hurt his reputation. A few years later, he was appointed Governor General of India. And then today, in 1821, Mexico won its independence from Spain. And that, of course, has a connection to Steve Mary case and also HUD corruption here in San Francisco and real estate corruption and an attempted assassination with Benito Juarez, who became the first Mexican of Indian descent to become president of Mexico. And in 1803, the U.S. Supreme Court issued its first ruling on the unconstitutionality of a law, Marbury versus Madison. This was the business where John Adams, at before midnight, when his term expired, appointed all of these officials. And when Thomas Jefferson, the third president, came in, he ordered James Madison, who was Secretary of State, to invalidate all of these appointments that John Adams thought that he had legally appointed. That was a famous case, a guy named Marbury versus the Secretary of State. It's a classic U.S. Supreme Court case. Another U.S. court, the Court of Claims, was established in 1855, and this was where anybody who has a claim against the government files that claim in the U.S. Court of Claims. I think on some claims the limit is $10,000. Also today, in 1863, the Arizona Territory was established. Back to the federal government in 1868, the House of Representatives, 126-47, voted to impeach Andrew Johnson, who was trying to fulfill Abraham Lincoln's vision for Reconstruction and reconciliation after the Civil War. In 1882, Ferdinand de Sleps, who was the guy who successfully built the Suez Canal, he began work on the Panama Canal, but he didn't deal with the mosquito and malaria problem. It took the Americans, George Gorgas and Walter Reed, to go down there and first deal with, when we acquired the rights to build the canal, they first dealt with the environmental issue and poured oil over the swamps and the water puddles where the mosquitoes bred, and then subsequently increased and affected the workers who couldn't work on the canal. And then in that same area, in 1895, the Cubans started their war against Spain, and of course in 1898, with the blowing up mysteriously of the USS Maine, which was sent down there, later it turns out that the Spanish didn't sabotage a ship, but coal dust exploded. The Cuban War started. And then we have out of that war this famous literary message, A Message to Garcia. We'll get into another day. And then in 1903, the U.S. acquired Guantanamo Bay, which has been in the news as for where we deposit the accused terrorist, and also it's a naval base and it's exclusive down there. Also, someone else who's involved in the Steve Mary case, Captain Vincent Averna, a graduate of Temple University Law School, and also served on the USS Sullivan. He handled the appeals of the case that was profiled in the movie A Few Good Men, about the court-martial of some Marines who killed another Marine. And then in 1917, this is supposedly the issue that the British intelligence used to get the United States into World War I. Count Zimmermann was the German Foreign Secretary, and they sent a notorious cable to Mexico trying to stir up Mexico against the United States, and the promise was that Mexico would regain the supposed stolen territories of Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas from the United States if they came into the World War I on the side of Germany. And the British intercepted the telegram and very, very deftly, as they're very, very good at this, gave the telegram to the Wilson administration, and that was one of the pretenses that finally pushed the Wilson administration to declare war against Germany. It was also the sinking of the, not the Titanic, but the ship that had a lot of Americans on it, He's also carrying munitions. And then also in 1917, the Russian Revolution started. If you want to see a good picture on that, see Reds with Tom Reed was an Oregon communist journalist who went there. Famous movie with Beatty, who's the brother of Shirley MacLaine. He starred in it. Also, another movie, Nicholas and Alexandra, very good movie which depicts the beginning of the Russian Revolution. And this is interesting because we're talking about the controversial Hoover movie. In 1923, when J. Edgar Hoover, his first name was John, was involved in the mass arrests of mafia. I don't know what the disposition of their cases were. We'll get into that another day. It's interesting on the J. Edgar Hoover, Dustin Lance Black was interviewed, tape-delayed interview, on one of the radio shows, Fresh Air, was sometimes called Foul Air, and he was talking about he wrote the script for this movie, and it's controversial for a lot of reasons, but anyway, and it's mediocre. He also wrote the script for Milk and got an Academy Award, and of course Milk has a lot of political fiction in it. This is Harvey Milk, the guy who was murdered with in the City Hall here in San Francisco with George Moscone. A lot of people don't know, and this was another thing that was censored and suppressed. Milk was involved in drugging, having drug parties, and inviting young boys up there to a penthouse of a hotel. This came from somebody who attended a couple of those parties. Also, he had sexually harassed, this is the allegation, Dan White. He used to pat him on the fanny and whisper nothings in his ear or whatever. And I guess Dan White just cracked. Of course, if it had been Daniela White, people would have been in an uproar. So these are some of the things that go on. Among the events today, we had the first U.S. group hospital medical co-op was set up. And this is interesting because with the high cost of medicine and the delivery of medical care, we've got to find a way to reduce costs. Also, this should be relevant because the police chief of L.A., I forgot his name, there's a report out that he is promoting giving licenses, driver's licenses, to illegal aliens. Now, the problem with this is the California law very specifically states that you cannot get a driver's license unless you're not supposed to be driving unless you have auto insurance. So we have the highest rate of hit-and-run accidents, usually uninsured, most of the cases, of drivers who don't have licenses and who often turn out to be illegal aliens. And this is a case that just happened a couple of years ago here in San Francisco, which is up on the web, Amicus Veritas, a damn reckless driver, AmicusVeritas, where a woman from Mexico had no license. She was working illegally here in the United States for an employer who illegally hired her, had no insurance on his car. And when she hit a senior citizen who was recovering from surgery, it was her fault. She tried to bribe her way out of it, saying, would you take $200 and forget about it? So this is what, she was arrested, the car was towed. This is just one of many, many examples, and people get killed, injured, maimed by these drivers who have no licenses and no insurance. And so the medical cost to the American citizen is the cost that is not insured by, not covered by insurance, because there is no insurance for the perpetrator of the accident. But if the person who was victimized, was injured, has to go to the hospital or have medical care, somebody pays for that. And guess who? It's you. Also today, the voice of, this is important. Every time you brush your teeth, think of DuPont. DuPont on this day in 1938 started commercial production of the nylon toothbrush. You should brush often, protect your teeth. Also in 1942 on this date, the Voice of America, which was set up during World War II to broadcast our propaganda to Nazi-held Europe, they started their broadcast in German. And in 1945, MacArthur kept his promise that he would return, and Manila in the Philippines was liberated from the Japanese. The Japanese naval sailors went on a rampage and just massacred a lot of people. Juan Perón on this day, 1946, was elected president of Argentina, and along the way he acquired Evita. But don't cry for him, Argentina, and I guess a lot of people aren't. And also, this is where the notorious Juan Piferre comes from. Family connected to the oldest bank in Argentina, the Bank of the Province of Buenos Aires, and of course, it crops up here in the public corruption investigations involving real estate racketeering and sexual assaults on young military personnel. It's all documented at amicusveritas.org, AmicusVeritas.org, or Stephen Nary, Nary. And then in 1971, after Algeria won its independence, De Gaulle got rid of the North African possessions of France. Algeria turned around and nationalized French oil companies. There's a lot of oil, even in Libya. That's one of the reasons why the Allies, so-called, intervened. When you hear about these human rights issues and attached to foreign aid that's dispensed, this started with the Carter administration. He was the one that said, "We're going to look before you get foreign aid from us, we're going to look at your human rights record." And it's not such a good idea because we've got our own problems here in the country. And in 1981, Miss Jean Harris, who was the headmistress of a proper school, behaved improperly and was accused and convicted, tried and convicted of murdering her lover, Dr. Tarnover, who came on over and invented the Tarnover diet. It's an interesting thing that's happened in Texas. We have a black lesbian judge down there named Tonya Parker. She's a political activist. She was appointed to the bench. She has decided she is not going to perform any marriages because, as she claims, she can't get married because of Texas law. But she seems to have forgotten or had just said the hell with it that when a judge is sworn in, they're supposed to uphold the laws of the United States and of the state that they're in. So the question is, if she doesn't want to perform her duties, shouldn't she resign? Shouldn't she have her pay cut off? This is a problem that we have these judges, and it's happened here in these political issues, especially these crotch politics issues, where judges and staff attorneys and clerks in these courts, especially here in California, don't want to obey certain laws, and so they find a way to either tamper with the filing or they do other things to obstruct and delay justice in these cases, which involve heterosexuals usually, or people that they don't like. This is also interesting. The guy that invented the claimed he invented or designed the Obama poster that you see on bumper stickers, and some people wish they were placed elsewhere. This is his name, Shepard Fairey, F-A-I-R-E-Y, interesting pronunciation. He was convicted today, found guilty of criminal contempt that he destroyed records and fabricated evidence. Seems to be a lot that he has in common with some people in the Obama administration. And then, of course, we got into the L.A. police chief, decision to encourage illegal aliens to try to get driver's licenses. You know, I mean, if he doesn't want to uphold California law, what's he doing there? There's another one who should resign. Now, since Roger Karras died this month, about 11 years ago, yes, that's right, did do an interview with him, and I'm going to play it now because he had a great radio voice. He was the voice of the Westminster Kennel Show. He worked for ABC Radio and TV, and he wrote several books, and you can see his picture on the master page for today of The New Shadow. So I'm going to play his interview that I did with him. It's about a little over 15 minutes. Where is Roger, here we go.
Welcome to Animals and Ideas. Today the idea is electronic animal journalism, and my guest is the father of modern electronic animal and environmental journalists. It's my great pleasure to welcome to Animals and Ideas Roger Karras of ABC, a station which I'm channel which I'm on sometimes. Welcome to the program, Roger.
Thank you, Peter. Does that mean I'm old?
Oh, no. You're old enough to be my father. You can give me some ideas later. Roger, considering that you've written 30 books on animals and dogs and that sort of thing, what possessed you to, what motivated you to get into animal journalism?
It was the next thing to do. It's true, I've had 10 careers, and I've always, when the next thing came along as an opportunity, evaluated it, and then went to do it. I became an author at 33. I have, in fact, written 47 books. And I got my...
Being accurate in the media.
Right, and then I got my own radio show when I was 41, and I became a television correspondent when I was 46. And I don't have the foggiest notion what I'm going to do when I grow up. And you want to know something? It really doesn't matter, as long as it's interesting, as long as I can be involved in something I believe in.
And, of course, it's entertaining, most of it.
Well, entertaining, yeah, because entertainment is a device to hook people. Entertainment is the way you get him into the tent, seeing some of the popcorn, as I said earlier today. I'm in, as I said, I'm in show and tell. That's what I do, whether I'm writing or speaking, and I'm always doing one or the other. It's to get people aware of those things of which I have become aware. And it really is a show and tell with an ulterior motive.
We all have those motives, like myself. Roger, what, to use your phrase, or your the application of manifest destiny, which is usually used in a political sense, what is the manifest destiny of electronic media regarding animals and the environment?
Well, it is, of course, it's not the only destiny that the media is to fulfill while we are in tenure here on Earth, but certainly one of its destinies is to bring to the attention of people matters, problems, subjects that they would otherwise miss, because we can go places. It's very expensive, but we have the budget so that we can go places. We can spend $100,000, or in the case of if we're going up to see the pandas and the bamboo die off, if we can spend $253,000. I think that was almost $400,000. Our license fee alone was $125,000 to go up, and we had $2,675 in additional licenses to buy. We can go places. We can photograph. We can record. We can preserve. And we can bring to the people things that they just don't get to see themselves.
Or hear about.
Or hear about them, whether it be at radio or television. They're both electronic. And that's why it is show and tell. You tell it on radio and television. You show it on television. And if you're skilled at radio, you create word pictures.
I try. Roger, you mentioned the panda. Why is it that that animal doesn't seem to adapt in the United States?
It's not a matter of adapting in the United States. You've got to remember there's two of them in the United States.
They never seem to be able to go to full term with procreation.
Well, they've gone all the way, just so the baby was born dead, which is nothing, or died very shortly. The first one was born dead. And there's nothing at all unusual about a wild animal losing its first young. It's sort of a trial run anyway. For most wild animals, most firstborn don't make it. In the wild, if you just take something as simple as the African lion, only 50% of the cubs survive. There's an extraordinarily high attrition among the young of wild animals. And there are only 12 pandas outside of China. That's an extremely small number of animals, giving you a very, very low probability rate for survival.
Roger, seeing that you're interested in zoos and wildlife net, do you think that the way the zoos are set up today, that is really best for the animal, or is this just exhibit to get the most interest?
It's like asking me if people are good. Some people are good, and some people are terrible. Some zoos are terrific and fulfill their four roles, which is a recreational facility in an urban environment generally, conservation, education, research, not in the sense of chopping animals up, but in the sense of observing reproductive cycles and nutritional needs that can be extended to better understanding of their needs in the wild and in their habitat, and in breeding endangered species as endangered species survival center. Some zoos live up to this, and some zoos don't. They're terrible, terrible zoos, and it's going to be closed down tomorrow. There's no justification. No city deserves to have a zoo. A zoo isn't a right. A zoo is a privilege. No city deserves to have a zoo if they're not going to have a good one. There is no excuse for a poor zoo. If you can't afford a good one, close the thing down. But there can be no pat statement that covers all zoos. It's simply not possible.
Roger, what you're a conservationist, and I suppose you don't hunt. You hunt with the lens, and you do a very good job. You're a straight shooter. Do you think that we can achieve a balance between the hunting constituency and the environmentalist?
We don't have to. A relatively short time ago, as human history has recorded, 99% of the people in the world had hunting as a principal economic activity. Now, 1% of the people in the world have hunting as even a remotely significant economic activity. That's a line on a graph that tells its own story. Hunting will die out. We have the same number of hunters now that we did at the time of World War I, except we've got 2.5 times as many people, but the same number of hunters. Hunting, whether the hunter wants to fight it or not, is a vanishing anachronism. I'm not passing judgment on it. I'm just simply stating a historical fact. It's anachronistic and it's passing out of existence. One of this country's leading big game hunters told me very recently that silhouette target shooting on the rifle range was the future of hunting in this country. The very fact that we have game ranches where people go using farm-raised animals for target practice and exotic animals in itself is a statement about hunting that it's over. It's all over. And so it'll last a little bit longer, another 50, 75 years, but then it will vanish. The sporting firearms industry is a very distressed industry.
Why do those people resist change in the force of the future?
Because change, you're talking about social change, historical change, not the change within the individual. The person still feels the need to engage in recreational killing. I'm not a vegetarian. I cannot say that the person who shoots a deer and eats a deer is doing anything worse than I do when I order a steak in a restaurant. People who trophy hunt, that's something else. I think they got a screw loose. You want to go shoot a mountain lion so you can put a mountain in your wall or a rug on your floor, I think you're a kook. But that's my personal opinion, and it need not reflect truth, honesty, or anything else. It's certainly not a word from on high. The hunter is phasing out. I mean, there's going to be a lot of thrashing around at the end, but the number is shrinking and shrinking in relation to the overall population, and they will eventually be gone. And I don't think we should force them out of existence. Let them have their rights legal. Let them exercise their legal rights. And I'm not saying, you know, take away guns. I own many guns, but I use them on a target range. I don't want to kill anything. And I don't hunt. I'm not a hunter. Never been a hunter. But I enjoy target practice. So I'm not coming from that corner of the room, you know, take people's guns or anything. That's a lot of nonsense, overreaction, and it's based largely in ignorance. But hunting, the recreational killing, will go.
You do a lot of environmental reporting. Now, some people who are more conservative say we've got to strike a balance between the demands of the environmentalists and those people who are, shall we say, Darwinists so far as animals go. Do you think a balance can be achieved, or should man be very judicious in his overseeing the animal kingdom so far as preserving species?
Well, I'm always puzzled by what's an environmentalist. An environmentalist, as far as I know, is someone who says, I want to get up tomorrow, and I want to breathe some clean air that won't give me cancer, and I want to drink water from the tap that won't rot my gut out, and I want my kids to go to a classroom where the air is not filled with the asbestos flecks and bits of fiberglass and other things that can tear his lungs up. And I like beauty, and I like to go someplace sometime and just listen to the birds sing and recharge my soul. Not the poet in me holds sway for a couple of hours. It's an environmentalist. I mean, why do we separate him from the rest of mankind? Who the hell doesn't want exactly that? I'd be the president of a corporation if he stopped and think about it a little bit. He wants that too. I think some people just want it for themselves and nobody else. I don't see enemy. I don't see industry as the enemy of the environment. I don't see anybody except a sociopath as an enemy of the environment. Who, in their right minds, is against clean water, clean air, beauty, peace, quiet?
Those mean different things to different people.
Yeah, well, you know, some people like different kinds of ice cream too. I mean, they're, you know, the different levels and different tastes. But I can't. I honestly believe that anyone who is not an environmentalist is a sociopath, and perhaps should be put away, or they can't hurt themselves. Because what's an environmentalist? Stop and think. What are we saying? Clean water, clean air. Do you think some guy that owns a factory doesn't want that for their kid? There are different ways of getting there and different speeds of getting there, but everybody's going there. There's no other place to go.
All of us may drop along the way, Roger.
Well, indeed. There are inevitabilities. And one of the inevitabilities is that we're going to retain and restore a habitable planet. Or we're all going to die. It's not a matter of choice. It's not a matter of preference, no matter anything. It's a matter of absolute necessity. And anybody who does not come to understand that in time will be put away, if not in this generation, then a couple further down the road. It just takes some people a little longer to get on to it, catch on to what's going on and what's happening in the world. But people talk about environmentalists as if, you know, they were stamp collectors or something, and they're fun people with a funny little hobby, funny little twitch. What is environmentalism? It's surviving. It's living. Anybody who doesn't want to, go jump off a building and get it over with.
I'm sure that in some people's views. Roger, if you were addressing, talking to a group of pet owners or the pet food industry or animal lovers, what realistic practical information would you give them that to kind of assuage their paranoias?
Well, you've named an enormous group of people.
What would you say to the to people in the animal industry? Should they become more aware of conservation? Some people who let's take pet food. You want to take that?
Okay.
What would you say to the pet food industry? There's a growing concern about additives and our pets, what they're currently eating.
I think the pet food industry has done a pretty good job. I think there's more truth on the label of a can of pet food or a package of pet food than there is on the label of almost all the foods humans eat. I don't know that I would tell the pet food industry to do anything different than they are doing, really. There may be some companies that are using unwise additives, but there are individual problems and it would have to be faced as individual problems. But if you take dry kibble food, it's going to cost you 4 cents per 100 calories to feed your animal, as opposed to 12 cents per 100 calories if you're feeding them fresh food, and 8 cents per 100 calories if you're feeding them canned food, and 7 cents per 100 calories if you're feeding them semi-moist foods. If you feed them dry kibble, they're using protein that is largely coming from soybeans and corn, a little bone meal, and a few other meat byproducts. It's a very good balanced diet, Dan. Our animals do extremely well on it, and our animals eat much better than children do in almost every country in the world. As a matter of fact, they eat better than a lot of our kids do, who eat junk food. Pet food is not junk food, at least. There's maybe too much pressure in the part of the pet food industry to get people to buy canned food, which is 80% water. And I'd say to them, you know, tell the truth about the fact that your dry product costs half as much.
Gives them more.
And gives them more. It's better for them. It's better for their teeth, and no professional feeds them canned nonsense. Although the canned food is a balanced diet, it's just a terribly expensive way of getting there, and it doesn't do their teeth as much good as the kibble. No, I think the pet food industry as a whole would have to be applauded for coming up with good sources not competing with any human beings for protein. That's all nonsense. When you read a label, it'll say meat byproducts. I don't know if your listeners all necessarily realize that only muscle is meat by law. For instance, liver is not meat. Brains are not meat. Sweetbreads are not meat. Those are meat byproducts. Most meat byproducts are not licensed for human consumption the way liver and brains often is. Heart is a muscle, so that's meat. But the meat byproducts they're talking about on the label of a pet food is penis, testicles, vagina, rectum, ears, nose pad. Now, if you think that our dogs are starving the people of the world, load a boat up with that stuff and send it over and see how popular it will be on the international scene. Now, that's what goes in. Now, those are meat byproducts. And the rest of it's soybean and corn. And it's not soybean and corn that'd be used for anything else, because it's soybean and corn that farmers grow specifically on land they would not otherwise use. So the farmer's getting more money, and the dresser of the slaughtered carcass, instead of selling those meat byproducts to the fertilizer or chicken feed industry for 2 cents a pound, is selling it to the pet food industry for almost 20 cents a pound. So he's getting more money out of the carcass. If anything, it's keeping the price of meat down that we eat. So by and large, I would applaud the pet food industry, and if some individual companies are using unwise additives, I'd say stop it. Use your heads. You know better. But I don't know specific cases. It's not my field of expertise. I'm not a chemist.
But you are already a media journalist. We've gone from the environment to the dogs, happily and informatively. I hope that you continue to bring us informative, exciting stuff, and you keep igniting people's imaginations and keeping their hopes fired. Thank you for being on the program, Roger.
Thank you, Peter, very much. It's a pleasure being here, and if indeed I do any of those things ever, I'm pleased, and I'll try to do it again.
All for Encores. This is Peter Paul for Animals and the Idea of Electronic Journalism. Thanks for listening.
Okay, we ran over a little bit, so we're going to end now, but this is such an important interview, one of the best that I ever did. And so we will end with our usual, since we're still in the political period, politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
A lot of people will be picking candidates this year. You better think twice and worry about those polls. We'll get into some of the things you wanted to know but didn't know where to look, who to ask, or how to ask about polls and some other things. This is Peter Paul Brizola. Good night, and we will be back Monday, and we won't run over. Also, you're invited to go to our YouTube. We're updating. We've got about 140 videos up there, and we'll be doing some things on some of the things you need to know about the coming U.S. Post Office changes. This is Peter Paul Brizola. Good night.